Right. I'm going to get started. My name is Alan Mios. Welcome to this session on Windows Phone security. I hope I'm not going to disappoint you. I'm not going to do any demos because it's difficult to do security. Maybe a little one here or there. Anyway, I'll talk about Windows Phone 8 security and the new security architecture, if you want, all the implementations with it. You probably know that Windows Phone 8 has not released yet, so this is a pre-release session. Things can change, obviously, until you actually release a product to our OEMs. I don't expect a lot of changes in. I may make some notes as to where there may be a little change here and there. Not fundamentally. All the things that I'll talk about will be fundamentally the same as we release the operating system to device manufacturers later this year. What do I want to talk about? When we talk about security, I first of all want to show you how we think about security, what goals we think when we think about security in general around the phone. What do we want to achieve, right? What do we think is important when we think about security on the phone and on a mobile device. I'll talk about system integrity, how we think we can protect the operating system from malware and rootkits and so forth. I'll talk about the security in the application platform because obviously a virus is an application, so how do we protect the application platform from being invaded or a compromise as such. I'll talk about how we protect data on the phone that is stored on the phone, specifically device encryption and other elements in there. I'll talk about access control to the phone, how you make sure the right person has access to the phone and it's not being accessed by anybody that doesn't need to be there. And yeah, if something goes wrong, never say never when we talk about security, right? If something goes wrong, how do we remediate? What do we do? Or do you do when you have Windows Phone 8 people in your organization? How many of you have Windows Phone 8 in your organization today? Just raise some hands. Not too many, right? Windows Phone 7, of course. Yeah, Windows Phone 8. Did I say Windows Phone 8? Raise arms again. All right. Okay. All right. Big portion. Thanks. Thank you very much. We're proud of Windows Phone. It's a new kind of phone that brings an experience to users that is really exciting and challenging them and gets them the information they want. We think it's a really nice phone, and a lot of users think so too. But IT people, how many of you are IT people? Is there anybody not raising his hand? All right, most of you are IT people, right? Or in the security group or anything like that, or developers. So IT people, when they think about security, it's important to IT people because security is you need to protect the data and the information and the network of your organization because you have information that it needs to be kept from competitors and all kinds of people that don't need it, right? So when we think about security, we always start with the user first because the user is actually the person that uses this phone. And many users don't think about security. They think about how they use the phone and why they use the phone and how they can connect with their family and friends and other employees in the organization. They want a great experience. And with Windows Phone, we deliver a great experience and we want to protect that experience. So even when we think about security, we always think, so what's the impact on the user when we do this, right? And sometimes we make decisions that you are not going to like as IT people. And I just want to put that up front. That's the first thing we think about when we think about security. So it's important to see. Now, we don't forget this end user because the end user's safety is important too, right? The phone is a beacon that somebody walks around with. Because it has a GPS and stuff like that, right? So if you don't protect that information, the user becomes a target people can start preying on a user, can start spying on a user in all kinds of ways. Users use this phone to do payments. Users use this phone to access websites and so forth, right? They're all not always aware of what is going on in this environment, and we need to put stuff in the phone that helps them, that protects them, right? It gives them the tools to protect themselves. And sometimes it gives you the tools also to help and protect them. Developer trust is also an important goal for us because a phone is not just a device. It lives in an ecosystem. We all know that there is an app for that, right? Developers write applications for the phone, and they need to trust this operating system. If you have a bank developing a consumer app for people to go to their bank account and consult it and do transactions, they want to make sure that there's a platform they can trust to do it on. And there are other applications out there, tons of them, that need some kind of security. And developers need to be sure that when they develop for this, it's a secure platform. They can trust, and they can go to their customers and say, yes, you can trust my application because it runs on a trusted platform. And obviously, in terms of device manufacturers, in terms of all the ecosystem, there are lots of people depending on this and that need the trust. And then, finally, we got you, right? We also need to think about enterprise customers that say, we want to use phones, smartphones, and all kinds of mobile devices in our environment to make our people more productive and have them communicate and so forth, and we have some policies that this device needs to comply with, right? So we need to think about those too. These are the overall goals we always talk about when we think about security on Windows Phone. And we have been doing that for a while. Now, with Windows Phone 8, we are implementing a number of new security controls we didn't have in Windows Phone 7. And it starts early. It starts when the phone is booted, right? When somebody presses the power button, what happens? Let's think about security at that point in time. Because it's when the power button is pressed that the first opportunity comes for anybody writing some kind of malware or whatever, right, to try to exploit the platform. And we need to protect the platform early on if we want to create a trusted platform. So let's make sure that secure boot is there and protects the platform from all kinds of malware. The boot process has basically two phases, and I'll go in details about this. It's kind of a, okay, let's agree on words, right? I pronounce this totally wrong. It says UEFI, and I say UFI, right? When I say UFI, I mean UEFI, all right? That's what I mean. So just wanted to make sure we understand each other. It's probably not the right pronunciation, but anyway, there's a pre-UFI boot, the boot loader, so to speak, of a secure or a system on a chip, right, that initializes the chip, so to speak, needs to be activated. That's pre-boot. And then you have UFI, secure boot, implementation on Windows Phone, which is the BIOS of the operating system, the firmware of the phone starting up. So the two phases need to be secured. And then in the end, we create a operating system, a secure operating system, in a status that is trustworthy and that we can build on. From there, the operating system takes over and provides a secure environment. So the power button is pressed, and the firmware bootloaders load. The firmware bootloaders are provided by the SOC vendor. In this case, it's Qualcomm for Windows Phone 8. Right? They provide the bootloaders, and we have agreements with them and a process in place and so forth, and I'll talk a little bit more about the details in my next slide to make sure that this bootloader is secure and cannot be tampered with. Second is the UFI phase, right? If anybody knows what UFI is in detail? No? Okay. If you want to read it, there's a URL on the bottom. There's a spec there. You will have to register. Not for any other reason than to sign that you won't be distributing the documentation yourself, Everybody has to go there, just enter an email address, and you can download the documentation. Anyway, the UFI environment is an environment that replaces, traditionally in a PC environment, the BIOS, the firmware of the system. It initializes all kinds of things like the sensors on the phone and so forth, and makes them work with the central processing unit, if you want. Right? It's an application environment. You can write applications for UFI, and all kinds of hardware vendors do that and provide it to the OEM. And the OEM gets those and implements those on the phone. We require from our device manufacturers to create a secure UFI environment. And that is a standard, right? If you go to the URL, you can read about secure UFI and what it means. And they are required to do that. Again, we have agreements and processes in place to make that happen. We ourselves are actually providing components to our OEMs, which we call the Windows Phone Boot Manager, right? It's the manager that actually starts the operating system in a way that it should be started. That's a UFI component, or do we provide to them as such. Now, all this, when everything goes well, goes in sequence, right? Pre-boot, and the UFI environment executes, and it takes over, the Windows Phone Boot Manager takes over, and boots, or the Windows Phone OS starts it up, provides it to the user, or it starts the Windows Phone Update OS. Both are, again, secure OSs, and I'll talk about it. The Update OS is there to be able to update the operating system and other and UFI components on the phone, actually. Right? Again, this is when everything goes okay, when everything is well, so to speak. If it's not well, the phone actually stays in UFI and starts what we call the boot flashing or the flashing mode of the phone. Right? It goes in flashing mode. The user can't do anything with it. In general, they will come to you and say something's wrong, or they'll go to their mobile operator or wherever they bought the phone and say something's wrong. Can you fix my phone? Right? Obviously, you can force the phone to go into flashing mode, and I'll talk a little bit about that too, because sometimes it's needed to flash the phone, to put a fully new image on the phone if you want, and for technical reasons or so forth. In most cases, you as an IT department will never be confronted with flashing mode unless something's wrong with the phone. You can consider this the blue screen of Windows Phone 8. Now let's go through the process again. Trusted boot loaders. This is pre-UFI. This is early on. The power button is pressed and the phone initializes. The system on the chip initializes first, right? The central processing unit, so to speak, initializes. And it does a number of things. What needs to happen? This system, this pre-boot environment is securely signed. And in the manufacturing process with OEMs like Nokia and so forth, they will provide a hash of the public key with which this boot loader is signed and put it in the chip and blow a number of fuses. Before they blow a number of fuses, they will add some other things, a number of keys, and we'll talk about these keys for the UFI environment. And the keys used to do the device encryption, they're all put into a safe environment, and then the fuses are blown. Once the fuses are blown, nobody can write to that environment where the keys are. They are protected. They can only be read and used on the phone. Every phone gets unique keys, right? We're not encrypting every phone with the same key. There is entropy in the process to generate a unique key that is stored in a secure environment, and then the fuses are blown, so that the phone is unique and has unique keys for use. It has a number of unique keys and a number of common keys that are used for other purposes or in general used for the operating system to function. There is no secure bypass for the bootloader, right? There is no way that you can do an unsecure flash. We require secure flash. We already require secure flashing with Windows Phone 7. There is no way to circumvent this requirement and in the process. So we have a secure boot loader. The boot loader starts, initializes the SOC, and then moves, and then everything moves into UEFI, right? UEFI is a standard. It's all about keys and what is signed with what and so forth. There's one master key, if you want, the platform key. The PK is there, is the master key that generates or controls everything in the UEFI environment, the execution in that environment. All the UEFI components, and I told you it's an application environment. You can write applications for that. All these applications are signed with UEFI keys. The UEFI environment also has a allowed and forbidden signature database that can be updated to make sure that those keys used, for example, to sign the operating system are there. Once a key would be compromised, it can be updated so that a secure image can be loaded instead of an unsecure image. In the case there is a breach, right? Normally that wouldn't be needed, but in the case there is a breach. And the key exchange key is actually used and controls these two databases of allowed and unallowed keys used or signature used for image loading so that inappropriate images are never loaded, or we can update it so that inappropriate images don't get loaded. And then there is a process of which applications execute in what order and so forth, and the number of variables that control that execution as such. In the final end, the execution will go to the Windows boot loader, the boot manager for Windows Phone, that takes over. At that point in time, when the boot manager actually starts for the operating system, the boot manager knows that everything up front that happened there is a trusted process. Everything was checked with the keys and the hashes, so that it's a trusted process. And can start then a trusted process itself. The boot manager will only use fully signed components in the operating system to start it up, knows what the state of the operating system was last time, before it shut down, and will bring the operating system back up in the same state that it was shut down before. So all the binaries in the operating system are signed. They're all signed with Microsoft keys. Also, OEM binaries in the operating system are all signed with Microsoft keys, provided that Microsoft creates a package, an image that can be loaded, signed, and provided back to the OEMs so the OEMs can use them for their different models of phones that they have as such. This is a little different from Windows Phone 7, where we had only Microsoft binaries and applications like Outlook, for example, signed by us. And obviously, we'll continue to do all the marketplace application signing, or the marketplace apps that can be downloaded by users will also be signed through the marketplace process. Obviously, also in Windows Phone 8. We did that also in Windows Phone 7. But all the OEM components are now also signed by Microsoft. So our goal here is really to create a verified operation environment, right? When the phone starts and the operating system is running, we know we can trust, and people know they can trust the operating system. There's no way to introduce, and no way is a wrong word, right? It's going to be very difficult for hackers to introduce components in the operating system that are not valid, that could be considered malware, right? The drawback for this is that people will not be able to reflash their phones with custom builds, something that happens a lot in Android environment, but also happens in the Windows Phone environment today, right? You can hack together a build of the operating system and put it on an existing device and customize it, so to speak. With this process, that becomes impossible to do, right? Because nobody has actually access to all the keys needed to make the operating system execute, and a hacked build, hacked image that you put on a phone will just not work, will just boot into a blue screen, so to speak. Any questions? Go ahead. Will we do security testing? Yes. Right. We're already doing a security device. What do we call it? Security development lifecycle testing. That was kind of a standard practice within Microsoft for our own components. We do the same for the components of the OEMs. That's probably what you are referring to, right? Yes. So we do security testing, plus we have agreed processes with our OEMs in terms of how the full signing process needs to work within their manufacturing environment. Because obviously, there's a lot of complexity in doing that if you need to sign all the components and make sure they are working together, signed with the right keys, and nothing goes wrong. Yes. All right. So the question is, what about private marketplaces and private applications, custom applications built by customers that they want to sideload, right? I have a session tomorrow to talk about sideloading, because with Windows Phone 8 will allow you to do that. But they don't have to go through a Microsoft process, certification process, or anything like that, right? If an organization, and I'll talk tomorrow about the process, how they can do it, decides to have their own applications, develop them, they will have to be signed with a certificate again, right? And they can be sideloaded to the phone. The responsibility about the security of those applications lies with the publisher of that application in that sense. So we don't take over any certification of that. Was a question over there? Usually it's AES 128 or 256. Those are the two that we usually use. So what algorithms are used for encryption and signing? Any other questions? All right, so we have there was one? No? All right. We have a secure operating system that started. What about the application model itself? This is an overview of the application model for Windows Phone 7, right? I'm putting this up because in Windows Phone 8, we're going to do something very similar. Let me take you through it. And in Windows Phone 7, and we will have this in Windows Phone 8 too, we have what we call a chamber security model, right? The chamber model means that every application runs in its own isolated chamber, in its sandbox, its whatever you want to call it. We call it a chamber. Now, in Windows Phone 7, we had four different chambers. One is a trusted computer base, and it's kind of weird because it's on the top, right? The base is on the top. But the trusted computing base is where the kernel runs. It's kind of the most powerful chamber, if you want. If you're running that, then you can do pretty much everything. Now, drivers run there too, which is obviously a risk. From a risk perspective for us, we said, well, the risk is probably more in the drivers than anywhere else, so they run there too. I'll talk more about drivers in a minute, but once the chamber is established and we have three other chambers, the application runs in there, and we have fixed rights chambers, two of them in Windows Phone 7. One is the standard rights chamber, and the other one is the elevated rights chamber. And most of our own applications and the operating system itself were running in one of these two chambers, right? If you think about a cross-OS service, a media service, for example, for streaming music or producing music or having music, have people listen to music, those kind of things that are exposed to multiple applications, they run as a service, they're usually going to run in elevated rights chamber in Windows Phone 7, right? Now, if you get a malware or an attack on the phone anyway, and it attacks a service that runs in elevated rights, it's obvious that if the attack is successful, the attacker is going to get elevated rights. And that is a problem and such. For all third-party applications, we had a fourth chamber, which is the least privileged chamber. The least privileged chamber is created ad hoc for the application. So if you go to Marketplace today and you download an app, this app comes down number of DLLs that gets installed in an isolated directory on the phone. And based on the manifest that goes with this app, a manifest has a number of capabilities that the app needs. I need to be able to make a phone call or things like that, right? To be able to run. That's in the manifest. It gets generated by the tools when the developer actually creates the package for the application. And that's something we check in verification in the marketplace. But the capabilities in that manifest are used by the trusted computer base, which has a policy database, executes that XML there to see, oh, these are the rights the application needs. I'm going to create an isolated chamber that has just these rights, no others, right? And applies that to the package in the installation directory and the data directory for that package that are isolated. Nobody else has access to the installation or data directory for the package. Only the package has, and the package has a chamber in which it runs, executes, that is least privilege. Least privilege, it only gets those privileges needed based on its manifest, right? Those are the four chambers we have. This is a great security model. And the reason it's great is because it's least privilege, right? And it gives isolation to applications. Applications cannot communicate with each other. They cannot write data. And you have a question. I'm going to come with you in a minute. So applications cannot communicate with each other. They have their isolated storage. Applications cannot go and read storage from another application. They execute in their own environment, and they cannot elevate their rights. They cannot say, oh, I want to be able to, I don't know what, get access to a certain object in the operating system when they had never need to do that. If it's never in their manifest, they will never get access to that capability because it's a least privileged chamber. And what's your question? Yes. Yes. And the most important one on Windows Phone 7 is location, right? The user, first of all, has the right to deny a application, in general, can say in the operating system, in the settings screens, I don't want location to be activated in general across the operating system. And then at installation, the user has the option to go into what we call the detailed page. Now, I'm sure not many users do that, right? They say, oh, this looks like a great application. Let's download and install it. But there is a details page that describes what the capabilities are of the application. At download, at install, so to speak, if the application requires location, the user gets a pop-up that says, this application needs location data. Do you want to enable that, yes or no? User can say yes or no. And then the first execution of the application, again, when it's location, the user gets another pop-up saying, this application is going to use location. Do you want to allow that, yes or no? Right? So the user has visibility to the capabilities, and the user can deny mostly location capability if he requires that. Other questions about the model? In Windows Phone 8, we pretty much have the same model. But if this works, yes, changed it a little. We did away with the standards chamber and the elevated chamber. We did away with those, and we asked the developers of all the components of the operating system to declare their capabilities. And we create for every operating system component a least privileged chamber. So all the components in the operating system are now also running in least privileged mode, right? In their own isolated chamber again. Now, running in an isolated chamber is obviously very difficult for an operating system because components have to work with each other. And if they are isolated, they cannot work with each other. Every process in the operating system also has a unique identifier, and we as Microsoft know the unique identifier of all the components in the operating system, so the developers know if they need to address a service, what identifier to use within the operating system, so they can actually communicate with those. Anybody outside of Microsoft doesn't know the identifiers and cannot communicate with them except through the published APIs in the developer's kit, which will be released later this summer. Right? So all services and applications now also run across the operating system in Chambers. The big advantage of this is that, again, when a service within the operating system would be compromised, it would only get the rights or capabilities of that server. It would never service. It would never get capabilities outside of that the range requested for that service. It grows the same kind of isolated chamber model across the operating system. Windows Phone 8, and I'll talk about it more in detail. I have a slide next one on the capabilities, but Windows Phone 8 also has a richer list of capabilities. Again, I don't have a full list for you to show it right now at you. The list of capabilities is available today for Windows Phone 7.5 on the developer's portal, the App Hub, and the same list will be extended and enhanced once we have it finalized for Windows Phone 8. And then you'll have a visibility to all the capabilities. Now, the important part of having a richer set of capabilities is that a lot of drivers, so to speak, needs capabilities too. And by creating a larger list of capabilities that goes in the area of the drivers, we're able to pull them out of the trusted computing base and have a combination of a smaller driver with more applications running in the secure operating system chamber model and not in the computing base. Right, so the attack surface of the trusted computing base becomes smaller, because that's where we as Microsoft expect most attacks. Right, we expect most attacks in the firmware and in the trusted computing base, because people are looking for the biggest value when they create attacks on an operating system. Right, the value is the portions that have more capabilities compared to applications and so forth. The right to exploit something with the biggest value. Security and malware is an economy, right? It works exactly the same as the rest of the economy. So we do have a number and need to of capabilities. This is a list of capabilities in Windows Phone 7. We're still working on the one in Windows Phone 8, so that's certainly something that's still going to change, right? No final there. But it's the ones in Windows Phone 7 Plus that we'll have. I have a URL there for those who want to have a direct look at where the capabilities are and where it will be, I suppose, for Windows Phone 8, although the URL is probably going to change a little there. But anyway, easy to find as such. When you look at the capability, don't think about it very granularly. It's a class of APIs, if you want, right, that we are talking about and that people can subscribe to. Now we have a secure boot process. The trusted operating system has booted with all the signed components. We have an isolated chamber model that applications run in, including the Microsoft applications that run in the operating system or part of the operating system. Now, the next step is let's protect the data stored on the device, right? And that's device encryption. Windows Phone 7, 7.5 didn't have device encryption. Windows Phone 8 has full device encryption. And I write it probably here as using Windows disk encryption technologies, right? David will immediately think like, he didn't write BitLocker. Not yet. We haven't released yet. But we are intent to FIPS certify everything, yes. So I didn't write BitLocker. Obviously, it's using the same code because Windows Phone 8 is like Windows 8. It's based on the same operating system, right? It's just a different branch for the phone because it has specific phone functionality. But it is Windows 8, basically, all running in an ARM on an ARM processor architecture. We use the same code for the encryption on the disk, on the storage of the device. I don't call it BitLocker for the reason that It is not manageable like BitLocker. Who's using BitLocker in their organization? A number of you, right? So in the Windows 7, it does full device, full disk encryption for you. And it stores keys in a TPM. Windows Phone 8 uses the TPM 2.0 standard, which is the newest standard for TPMs. And it uses the same technology. But it's not manageable like in Windows 7 today. In Windows 7 in an IT environment, you'll be able to escrow the keys in Active Directory, right? So whenever something goes wrong, a user, a component is damaged in the PC, or a user adds something to the PC, there will be a screen like, please enter 64 digits key to it, and all kinds of support calls and what have you. But having the key escrowed enables you to help the user going forward. Plus, in Windows 7, you have the opportunity to require a PIN in the boot process, right? Before the OS boots, the system will come up and ask the user to enter a PIN before they can actually boot the operating system. You don't have those two things in Windows Phone 8. We have not implemented those things. We are intending to have encryption always on, starting at first boot. The encryption will start and will encrypt the full internal storage of the phone and will keep encrypting it for the user. User will not be able to switch it off as such. We will switch it off for certain countries, like is anybody from Russia here? No? I suppose nobody from China is here, but China and Russia don't allow BitLocker to be imported in the country, right? So for those countries, it will be switched off by default because it's not allowed legally in those countries. And there are other countries like that don't allow it. So that will be switched off. There is a chance that we will make it manageable, meaning that you can switch it off and on as an IT department on a phone. But I'm just saying there is a chance we will do that. So we haven't released yet. We'll let you know once we release what it is. But it will always be there. You will be able to switch it on, or it will be on by default. So no escrow, no manageability of it. We only encrypt the internal storage. Windows Phone 7 also, Windows Phone 8 also supports external SD cards, right? Micro SD cards you can insert in the phone. It's the first time we'll support it again officially, so to speak. You can insert an SD card for extended data storage, but we won't encrypt that SD card. We have no idea about the performance of the SD card or the quality of the SD card and so forth. We just won't encrypt it. Now, we have a number of protection controls or controls there for you and to help it to protect the user. You cannot store anything on the SD card except for media. Things like music, pictures, videos. When an SD card is inserted in the phone will ask the user, what do I need to do with this? I see you're inserting an SD card. Do you want me to store the pictures, movies, and music on the SD card? Yes or no? What did I do now? Now, there it is. So I didn't drop off the stage. Not yet. So anyway, that's the thing that the user can store on the SD card. Obviously, the user can pull the SD card out and put it in a PC, put music and pictures on it, and then put it back into the phone, and the phone will read this music and picture and add them to the music and picture library of the user. Or the other way around, the user can move them in the PC and move the pictures off, those kind of things. By default, the phone will not store anything else on an SD card. There's another use of an SD card, and that's, I think the gentleman asked about sideloading of applications in an enterprise environment. If you are an enterprise and you have all the tools and so forth that I'll talk about tomorrow to create enterprise applications, you can store them on an SD card, and when the SD card gets inserted into the phone will ask, hey, I have applications here, go to the marketplace app in the phone, and you can install these applications, right? But that is only with this enterprise application. You can install from the SD card to the phone. The applications will be installed in the phone, in the internal memory. Applications will never be installed on the external memory, right? I know there was some rumors in blogosphere and so forth, because Joe Belfiore in the announcement on the 20th had a bullet point in his slide that says install applications when he was referring to the SD card. It's not installing on, it's installing from, and limited to enterprise applications. You have a question? Well, you can set a policy, but in that case, the phone will not synchronize email with the Exchange server, because the phone will report back to the Exchange server SD card not encrypted or false, right? So if you set that policy, no Windows Phone 8 will be able to... we will not... There's no ability to enable SD card encryption in Windows Phone 8. Yes. That's a good question, actually. Nearly forgot that. So there is an ability to set a policy to block the SD card or the use of an SD card from a management console, right? From a management system, you'll be able to block that. That's a policy. So what are the takeaways, right? Let's summarize. I have a secure boot process with a secure trusted operating system. Right, I have a security model that isolates applications and makes them execute in such a way that it protects the operating system and the user from malware and spying and those kind of things. We sign all the executables, binaries on the phone to make sure that they all only trusted components can run, and that includes applications installed from the marketplace so that there is no kind of unsigned malware that gets on there. And we do full device encryption. What's missing? Anybody? What did you say? Management APIs? No. What did you say? Memory encryption. Okay. Well, very edge case. I'm looking to something very simple. What's missing here? You have to talk hard. No. Network security. Come on, guys. Who are the security guys in the room here? Log on? All right, you're right. What use is all this if the phone is not locked, right? You leave the phone behind, it's not locked, and you have access to everything. You need to lock the phone. And this, sir? With a great question, great answer, you'll get a phone from me. So yes, we need to make sure that the device access is controlled, right? We need to lock the device. As an IT department, you want a secure device, make sure you have policies on the device that lock it, right? Password policies. How do you do that? We have two options. Windows Phone 8 will support, as we do today with Windows Phone 7, 5, and 7.0, we support Exchange Active Sync policies to lock the device. Lots of these policies we have are password related, and I'll show you in a minute which policies we have. So lock the device with these policies. If the main use case you have in your organization is to allow people to do email and calendaring and those kind of things with an Exchange server, use Exchange Active Sync to do device locking. Oh, and then second, in Windows Phone 8, we will have native device management. And I call it native device management. We're including a management client in the operating system. And again, I will talk about that in detail tomorrow morning at 8:30. Let's repeat, at 8:30. Who put me at 8:30? Anyway. But tomorrow morning at 8:30, I have a management session, device management session, where I will be talking about device management. In the device management environment, it's focused at, again, policy management, which you can use to set device lock policies, but also application distribution. And the scenario that the gentleman was talking about, I am an organization, I have my private apps for Windows Phone. I don't want to put them in Marketplace. I want to distribute them directly to the phones I know. That's when you need a device management environment. And the device management environment obviously also supports setting policies. Question? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. No. No, we don't. We don't implement Kerberos. That's what your question is, right? Well, we do not have single sign-on on Windows Phone. The Windows Phone doesn't know about users, right? You set a password on the phone. Okay, so the question was, how do we implement single sign-on against the SharePoint server and so forth, right? So we don't have single sign-on. Where the user accesses the device with his PIN code, it is a local situation, the user against the device. It's not the user against the directory service or an application server somewhere, right? And the user logs on to the device. You can use a simple password, a PIN, or you can use a complex password, as complex as you want to make it, to have the user log on to the device. Once he is logged on to the device, he needs to log on to an Exchange server or a SharePoint server and so forth. We obviously have a credential manager on the phone. So once you provision the Exchange, let's say it's an Exchange scenario. If you provision the Exchange information like the email address and eventually a domain name and a password and so forth as a user to the and you connect to your Exchange server, we'll cache those data in the credential manager on the phone, right? That are obviously protected with the system that I just detailed. And every time the user connects to the Exchange server, the device will reconnect to the Exchange server and do the authentication based on the credential manager. The moment you have on your domain a policy that says every 6 weeks we need to change the passwords, at the moment the user changes his password on a PC, because he won't be able to change it on a phone, right? He needs to go to a PC to change the password for the domain. Changes it, he will be prompted on the device to change his password there too. And again, then it will be cached in the credentials manager that will be enabled. Credentials manager is only available to those applications that use NTLM authentication in a network environment and will store it right there, right? You can also cache credentials in IE. If you have a web-based application and IE works against a web server may request authentication and then IE will cache those credentials within IE itself in its sandbox because it runs in its sandbox. And then another way to cache credentials is using a timed token, usually used in a web server environment, right? Or a web services environment, I should call it. For example, if you have an application on Windows Azure, right, you can have the user authenticate against that application, and the application can be written in such a way that it uses AD to go and authenticate the user in the back end. But once the user is authenticated, you can store a token within that application sandbox for that user that you can expire, I mean, every 2 hours, every 7 hours, every 14 days. That's something you put in yourself, so to speak. So we don't do single sign-on at this point in time. But we allow you to make the life of the user a little easier by not requiring the user to authenticate every time he needs to connect with a back-end service. Is that something we're thinking about? Are we thinking about implementing that? Yes, we have heard the question before. Yes. Yes. Other question? Certificate management. Yes. The question is, can I use certificates for user authentication against the back-end service, right? Like Exchange. Exchange with a proxy server supports that scenario, right? You can, but it's not easy. And yes, so you can in the sense that you need to import the certificate, the user need to do the import. It requires a user action to import that certificate, which is usually the failing part, right? It's not that easy. Now, I can't give you the complete answer. In Windows Phone 8, we'll make advancements, but it all depends on the MDM server, which I cannot talk about at this point in time. Right? But because we haven't said anything publicly about that domain, so to speak, of what servers will support Windows Phone 8, and it depends on those services. Another question. Dual factor authentication like smart cards? We don't support smart cards at this point in time in Windows Phone and Windows Phone 8. We have heard the question before. There's a lot of dual factor authentication that can be done differently. Certificates is one of them, for example, right? We do not have smart card support in Windows Phone at this point. You need to come to my session tomorrow. So tomorrow I'll talk about that. Yes. So yes, there is an enrollment support and SCEP services like that. Yes. But I'll talk about it tomorrow, more in detail. More questions? Yes. There is no VPN support in Windows Phone. And yes, we thought about it, but we haven't implemented VPN support at this point in time in Windows Phone. We also think that there is a lot of opportunity for people to not use VPNs, but to use in-app SSL or TLS type of encryption of the data against a cloud service or a service in the TMZ, outside of the domain, right? So there is opportunities to do that, but we haven't done a full VPN implementation in Windows Phone until now. It's just work, right? that's basically the decision. If I go back to my goals all the way in the beginning, we need to do a lot of stuff, and we haven't announced anything in Windows Phone 8. It was additional work to be done. And we haven't been able to get it into the schedule. It's not that we are not thinking about it. And we know some customers specifically with, let's call it legacy applications that run behind the firewall, have difficulty with that. We understand, yes. And we'll think about it for the future. I'm going to go to him first. We do not support SMIME in Windows Phone 8, no. We have heard it before. It's on one of those lists of more work to be done. Well, when I think about split tunneling, I think about the VPN, and we don't. So the question is there an opportunity to do split tunneling? Or to redirect, right? So a few things about that. It makes me think of a VPN, and we don't have a VPN. So in that sense, there is no split tunneling at all. But there is a, you can do what you could call a private APN, a private access point, and redirect all the traffic to the private access point. And at the access point, redirect it back out for when it is standard internet traffic. And when it is not, you accept it within your corporation as application data. So you would have to set up some kind of filtering that the phones would connect to after they hit your private access point. And a private access point is usually provided by the mobile operator, the operator that you work with. That means what will work on Wi-Fi? Correct, yes. Yeah, it won't work on Wi-Fi. Because you want to not accept certain traffic on your corporate Wi-Fi network? Is that what you...
No, with the internal, we have a different DNS, so and we would like to direct it to the internal or to the gateway to any students that we share with the
Okay.
Whereas normal browsing
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, we don't have that. More in tomorrow's, but from a security point of view, you're concerned about malware?
No, I'm concerned about what can be taken down from the App Store.
But what is your concern from a security perspective? That the user would take inappropriate content from the App Store? Yeah, on the App Store or on the Windows Phone Marketplace, we do certification and validation of applications. We also do malware checking on applications, specifically also because we are now running on the NT, in the NT environment, and the NT environment is a known and exploited ecosystem, right? So we are more concerned about malware, and we do extra checks on applications as such. I think from a application or a malware perspective, there shouldn't be that much concern. We don't have a lot of concern in that space if the application is coming from our marketplace because of all the checks we put in place, because of the application isolation infrastructure we have on the phone and protects the phone from if a malware slips through. I have a little bit about that in my remediation slide because we need to cover it, but from a malware perspective, I do not have a lot of concerns about that. The concern may be just a legal concern you have. Like I know in a number of European countries, there is a specific laws around privacy and separation of private data and corporate data. And if you have a corporate provisioned device to an employee and he starts downloading some private stuff on the phone, right, through an application, there may be liabilities there, right? I think it's more of a legal concern than you have. But we don't have blacklisting or whitelisting. An application, a user can download applications. Now, if you have a purely corporate device, you buy the device for your users, and they only have to use email and some applications, right? There is no need for them to have a live identity or a Microsoft account, as we call it these days, on the phone. You can just provision the services you want to provision. They would need a Microsoft account to go into the marketplace and download it. Now, if I work for you, I wouldn't be happy, but because I want apps. But anyway, right? You can prevent it in that way. Prevent it. You can instruct users not to do it and not put their, any live account on it if you want to. Yes? Good question. Let's move to the next slide. The previous question, so the question is about updates and those kind of things when there are vulnerabilities. I just want to quickly go through Internet Explorer. I could do a demo here if you want. I'll do it at the end. Internet Explorer 10 also runs in the sandbox. It is considerably enhanced in terms of performance, but it also has a security feature because it inherits Smart Screen from the desktop Explorer. So that means that the collection we do of all these malware-known sites are actually also used on Windows Phone to prevent users from going to these sites, right? And which is an important thing to do. Let's wake up the laptop. So my phone, let's plug it in. Yes. So if I go to Internet Explorer, and I'm here on MSN, right? But I have a favorite, which is a reported insecure site. I go to that site because this site is actually known by Microsoft as being a malware site. The user gets this screen, right? Big red screen saying, I wouldn't go there, right? Please go to your home screen and do something else. No, he cannot bypass that. So that's my demo. Right. So it's also very performant. You can go to SunSpider and try it yourself with a desktop, I suppose. But we're doing very well. Obviously, product hasn't been released yet, so we'll see how we do once we release. Hopefully, we continue to do very well in this space and deliver a great HTML5 browser with great speed. Unique also to Windows Phone, for those who use rights management services in Windows Server, Windows Phone 8 fully complies with rights management services and works fairly well if you apply it or deploy it to Exchange Server 2010 or you apply it to SharePoint Server 2010 or later. Rights management services on the phone are being respected. So if a user gets an email that's rights managed and says don't forward, the user will not be able to forward that email. They can read rights managed service email as such. If an attachment is with that email, like a Word document, the user can open it. Again, the rights management of the document is applied, and the user cannot do whatever the rights management tells him not to do, like copy, paste, print, forward, and so forth. Right? If you apply rights management to SharePoint Server, it will also be respected on the phone. So if the user connects to a SharePoint Server and downloads a rights managed document to the device, it will be respected by the Office applications on the device. The only thing the user cannot do in this environment is create a rights management email or create a rights managed doc, right? He can fully participate in the conversation. He cannot start a rights managed conversation as such. And then to answer the questions we had. So first of all, when anything goes wrong, the user loses. That's probably the thing that goes wrong most of all times, right? The user loses his phone. What happens? The user can go and wipe the phone. If the user has a Microsoft account, he can go to windowsphone.live.com. In the Windows 8 time frame, that URL may be a little different, but he goes to his live environment and can look for the phone on a map, can have it ring to find it, or can wipe it himself or herself. They can go to the email web environment for Exchange. I don't think we still call it OWA, but I still call it OWA. So the web access of Exchange, and can wipe the device there. And they can call you and ask you to wipe the device using your administrative console from the Exchange environment or from the MDM environment, the mobile device management environment. Both infrastructures support that type of remote wipe. Then there was a question about what about updates? Obviously, when the race is on, the race is on. And we'll coordinate with our big brother or big sister Windows, right, in terms of updates and so forth. With Windows Phone 8, we only do over-the-air updates. So there's no need to install the Zoom software on PCs in your organization. Users will get the updates over their data connection or a Wi-Fi connection. Generally, the update, when there is an update available for the user, it will be trickled down and to the phone in the background, so the user will not really mode. It will be staged there until it's all there, and then the user will get this pop-up. We have an update for you. Do you want to install it? The user can bypass that and can go to Settings, Windows Update, click on it. Is there an update available for me? If there's an update available for me, they can force the update at that point in time, right? Are carriers going to block that? Is that a question? So we have agreements with our tier one carriers on getting it through. Our policy is a little bit adjusted with Windows Phone 8. In general, carriers don't block it. They slow it down, right? Plus, there is all the throttling going on, like the one carrier goes and then the other carrier goes and those kind of things. So if the user wants, they can force the update to come from Microsoft. That is the bypass for that blocking, right? Then the user gets the update. So if there is a really highly critical update, security update, and you really want all your Windows Phone users to have that update, you can instruct them to push the button and have the update come down on the phone. Right? There is no way you can manage updates. That's probably the next question. There's no way you can use WSUS or something like that to download updates and then distribute them to your users. The user is in charge of the update. You can follow it and instruct them. Have a question? Okay, so there are two types, there are multiple types, but there are two, basically two types of updates. If we talk about critical security bugs that need to be fixed, right, they can be as well firmware as they can be the operating system. If it's the operating system, they're quite universal. If they're firmware, they obviously depend on the specific model and OEM as such, and we will work with the OEM just like we do now to integrate updates of all that and push them to the user. We have a policy to work very closely with the OEMs, and if you have seen that we are trying to get the firmware as thin as possible to make sure we get less exploits, but there is dependency on firmware.
What's the commitment then on support for those?
I'm not sure.
There's dependency with the ARCA vendor.
Well, we have the same cycle as Big Window. We have a update Tuesday that we use now. We have the sales cycle. Our commitment is that for non-critical updates, we get you a monthly update if an update is needed. If it's for critical updates, we can do an update in days and work with the OEM to get the update done in a short time. It's a real critical security update. No. All the updates come through Microsoft. Only Microsoft does updates to these phones. If it's an update that is in an OEM firmware, it comes to us and we'll distribute it through the Windows update infrastructure, right? It's not that we are dependent on the OEM to distribute the update. We distribute those updates for the OEM. So that is our commitment. You'll get all the updates from us. You're not dependent on HTC, Nokia, or Samsung for them to do an update. And then there's all other types of updates which are more feature-related, and those will come in regular bunches in times but are not critical. You have a sir in the back? Yes, I'm not from the embedded the division. And they will make announcements shortly around how they support the Windows 8 roadmap on embedded devices. But you call out the two biggest ones, right? Intermac and Motorola and for ruggedized devices and so forth. Right? They will make announcements. I'm sorry, I can't make the announcements for them. Yes? No, there will not. So the application platform, and we haven't made a lot of announcements, but the announcement we make is that we support C-sharp XAML-based applications, as we do today on Windows Phone 7, right? And we also support C and C++ applications. Now, we should be careful in calling that lower level, right? Writing a C or a C++ application First of all, if you write a full application that way, it will have no user interface, right? It will always be a hybrid application because the user face needs to be created in XAML C#. But the goal for supporting C and C++ is to enable people to migrate applications from other platforms onto the Windows Phone platform, because very often these applications are actually written in Object-C or other types of C, and it's easier to port these libraries onto Windows Phone and use them within a Windows Phone application as such. In general, these applications have the same type of access as a XAML application and are controlled in the same security model that I just showed, right? So there is no different or fundamentally different API set for what we sometimes call native applications versus managed code applications, XAML, C Sharp versus C, C++ applications, right? They both have to comply with the same security policies on the device, and the goal is much more helping people migrate an application than creating a totally different. So most games will probably be migrating through using the C, C++ a hybrid environment. Yes, no, I know. I've heard other people having that impression, yes. Question? Yes.
Does that mean, is there any way to the corporate to identify that people have not taken those updates and tell them they're not provided?
You need to come to my session tomorrow, yes. Yes. With an MDM system you can with an MDM system you can actually query the device and ask what build it is and so forth, and then take action based on that. So the question was, do we know what updates are on the device, what state the device is in? That's the question, right? We haven't published our development SDK yet. Once we do that, you'll have all the documentation around the development, and we'll have to wait until we do that. It's expected later this summer to be published and be available for download. And then you have all the documentation around what APIs are available and so forth. So the question was specifically around Bluetooth APIs, right? And access. Other questions? Yes.
About the MDM.
You come tomorrow, okay?
Yeah,
it's 8:30, actually. I don't want to be there alone.
Okay, I'll think about that.
So the Windows Phone 8 will be supported by MDM services.
Okay.
And that's all I can say at this point.
No.
Not really. You can build an SSL component if you want, but I don't know if you call it really a VPN app. But you cannot build a you cannot build a IPsec-based VPN. That would go into the networking stack, and that's something we do not allow at this point.
Is that smart screen filled out this? Can it be disabled?
Not by the user, no. Yeah, well, the user, no, it cannot be disabled by the user. Not by policy, no. No, smart screen will be on always. Well, we have a very, very optimized algorithm to know which ones we need to query. Plus, we download some information into the browser to make sure that there is a lot of caching going on there. Yes, we do check URLs. Also on the desktop, right?
Yeah.
Yes. There was another question out there, but oh, there it is.
Today we are selling new telephones which we have upgraded to.
Correct, yes. So the question is, today there are in market a number of Windows phones from Nokia, Samsung and so forth that will not be upgradable to Windows Phone 8 operating system, right? And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is a good question. So let me go back. When we announced on the 6020, we announced a new operating system based on the Windows 8 environment that we get a lot of information on. We also talked about a new hardware platform that is needed to run that operating system. The current devices in market are not capable of running the operating system and implementing a number of functionalities in this operating system. So we have decided to not upgrade existing phones with a full version of Windows Phone 8. We have decided to deliver an update to Windows Phone 7.5 operating system that we call the Windows Phone 7.8 operating system. 8 is the 7.8, right, connection with 8.0, that will deliver a number of functionalities, but mostly the screen layout, the capability of having multiple tile sizes on the home screen. That's basically the most of the functionality that people will get. So they will have a fresh, modern look that compares to Windows Phone 8, but they won't have the kernel and so forth, right, to that point. All right. Yes. Good question. You're asking what APIs will we expose, right? That, for example, access calendar data or maybe contact information in the people hub, those kind of things. So we'll make announcements around that when we release the SDK. Yes. Another question there. No, they won't. The question was, is there APIs for MDM systems to manage Windows Phone 7.8? Obviously, we support Exchange Active Sync with the policy set that we have, but they won't have the built-in management client that a mobile device management system could use, yes. All right. More questions? I don't have any more slides except telling you that we have a ton of other sessions. Me, I have one tomorrow at 8:30 that you all have to come to. All right? And I'm going to come to your question in a minute. And please do evals. And I'll still be available outside. I think we are on time, more or less. But you had another question. I'll answer that question. How do we back up Windows Phone 8? We are pre-release. We haven't made all announcements yet. You can expect an announcement that will talk about that. Thank you.